he could hear voices, cussing. Thad moved off to his left so as not to approach the voices directly. He cautiously found his way through the woods, made easier by the fact that the pigs were doing a fine job of underbrushing the area. Drawing closer, the voices got louder. Thad took a knee behind a large oak tree and listened. He could distinctly hear two voices. They were bitching at one another about getting a pig loaded quickly and getting the hell out of there. Rising to his feet, Thad moved to a sable palm between him and the voices. Pulling a frond back revealed a truck sitting in the field bordering the pig's hot-wired enclosure. It was a familiar truck. Thad instantly recognized the old green pickup. Knowing who was out there caused a rage to begin building in Thad, and he moved quickly towards the back of the truck. Two men were standing at the rear of the truck, gutting a pig. She was just too heavy for the two of them to pick up.
"Holy shit, it's full of babies," one of the men said.
"Shh, be quiet, dickhead," his friend countered.
"You want to die?"
"There ain't no one out here. We watched them leave, headed to town."
"You want to go get another?"
"We ain't got this one yet. Hurry up," his friend countered.
Thad crept forward. Both men had their backs to him. He looked for the weapon and saw a shotgun leaning against the tire of the truck. Thad waited until the men went to pick up the pig. Once one was on either end, and they lifted the sow from the ground, Thad stepped out and leveled his daddy's old coach gun at them. The two men were straining to get the hog up onto the tailgate when Thad said,
"Now y'all just keep that pig off the ground and don't even think about moving."
Both men's heads swiveled around in surprise. They were looking down the double barrels of his shotgun. They started to lower the hog when Thad motioned with the barrel of the gun and told them to keep it up off the ground.
"Come on, mister, this thing is heavy," one of them complained.
"I bet it is. She's a big sow. You killed the biggest one we got."
Then he motioned with the barrel at the 10 piglets lying lifeless on the ground, plus her litter.
"You've got a bunch of hogs. You ain't gonna miss one," one of the men moaned.
"Maybe, but I'll damn sure miss 11 pigs."
Motioning with the barrel of his gun, he said, "Now you two carry that hog up to the house."
"What?"
one of the men said.
"You heard me," Thad shouted. "Now get moving, and if that pig touches the ground, I'll unload all of this buckshot in your face. Now move."
Though Thad kept threatening them with the shotgun, the weight of the sow was simply impossible for the two men to carry. They just couldn't keep it off the ground, and it wasn't long before they were dragging it on its back through the woods. Reaching the cleared pasture behind the barn, the men dropped the hog and doubled over, breathing hard, spent from the effort. Dalton was there looking around and walked over to Thad.
"I heard a shot," he said, and looked at the pig. "What a shame."
"Yeah, it is. Lost the litter, too," Thad replied.
Thad pointed at one of the men.
"This one's name is Tommy Harrell. I don't know that one."
Tommy squinted at Thad.
"You know me?"
"Yeah, I know you. You don't remember running into me out in the woods one day with your girlfriend, do you?"
Tommy thought for a minute and slowly started to nod his head. A smile started to spread across his face.
"Yeah, I remember you now. You were burying my nigger."
Dalton was standing close to Tommy. His right hand flew out lightning quick and connected with Tommy's nose, snapping his head back and staggering him.
"Watch your mouth," Dalton said, as he looked at his hand.
"Shit!"
Tommy exclaimed.
"That's right. Now you remember me. You killed the wrong hog today," Thad said.
Dalton looked at Thad.
"What's this all about?"
"We found a young black kid hanging from a tree. This piece of shit showed up with two girls. They were showing him off to them. At least they thought they were. We buried the boy, but Morgan let this asshole go."
The other man with Tommy was getting scared. He looked at Thad.
"I didn't have anything to do with that, mister."
Thad glared at him.
"You're still guilty of stealing my hog."
"So we got a real piece of shit here then," Dalton said. "To say the least."
Looking at the two men, Dalton drew his Glock. All right, you fuckers, on your faces. Still holding his nose, Tommy said, What? Dalton stepped forward, placing his foot between Tommy's feet. Cupping the man's neck, Dalton shoved him, sending him to the ground with a thud. He looked at the other man who was starting to squat.
What are you going to do to us? I'm really sorry. It was Tommy's idea, he said.
Lying on his back, Tommy said,
Shut up, Robert, you pussy.
Dalton stepped up and kicked Tommy's hip.
Roll over on your face.
Then he pointed the Glock at Robert.
You too, on your face.
When the men rolled over, Dalton knelt on their heads and searched both men. He took a knife from each of them and tossed them over behind Thad. Now that he knew they weren't armed, he stood up and looked at Thad and asked,
What do you want to do with them?
Thad stepped up to Tommy.
You killed that boy, didn't you?
At first, Tommy wouldn't reply, so Thad kicked him.
Didn't you?
Tommy looked up.
You can't prove it.
Prove it? I don't need to prove anything. I know you did it.
Turning his face back to the ground, Tommy muttered,
Can't prove it.
Thad snapped. The shotgun spit thunder and fire as the load of buckshot smashed into Tommy's head. He was so close, it crushed it, like a bat hitting a melon. Dalton jumped back.
Damn, Thad!
And he looked down at his pants to see them covered with blood, bone, and tissue. Robert started to scream.
Oh, Jesus, please don't shoot me. I didn't do it. Tommy and some other guys did.
Thad looked at Dalton.
I told you he did it. I knew he did it. I knew that day he did.
Thad looked at the body. And now he's gotten what he deserves.
If he did what you say,
then he certainly got what he deserved, Dalton replied. Thad motioned with the barrel to Robert.
You heard him. He did it.
Dalton looked at the second man.
What are we going to do with him?
We'll give him to Morgan. I think he's got a chain gang going. He can work his crime off.
Just don't kill me. Please don't kill me,
Robert begged.
We just have to figure out what to do with him until Morgan gets back, Thad said.
Dalton looked at Robert.
You know how to butcher a hog? I mean, you killed one, so I assume you do.
Robert looked up and nodded.
Yeah, I know how. I'll butcher it for you. I'll do anything you want.
I'll go get the tractor, Thad said.
I stopped at the bunker as I came up to it. Jess, Fred, and Eric were there. The girls ran up to her window.
How are you? Jess asked.
So glad you're back, Fred said.
Jamie stuck her hand out the window, and both women reached for it.
I'm all right, just glad to be home.
Jess looked at me. Are you taking her home? Nodding, I replied,
We are. She needs to rest.
Can't you get someone over here so we can leave? Fred asked. Sarge climbed out of the truck.
You girls go on. I'll stay here.
I'll stay too, Eric said.
Jess and Fred ran around the truck and climbed in. At the house, they helped get Jamie inside and comfortable. Doc stayed to make sure she was all right. I told Jamie to let me know if she needed anything, and I'd drop in on her later. She waved at me from the sofa, where she'd been planted by the girls. Perez took up residence in a chair beside her and put his feet up.
You staying here?
Jess asked. Pulling his hat down over his eyes, Perez nodded.
Yep.
Jess looked at Doc. Should he be here since he's sick? She looked at Perez.
Sorry, I just don't want her to get sick.
Perez waved her off.
I'm all right.
Whatever he had isn't contagious now, I don't think, Doc said. From under his hat, Perez added,
Plus, I ain't leaving.
Doc shook his head.
Jamie, I'll be back to check on you. If you should start to bleed or anything, let me know, but I think you'll be all right.
You got lucky, real lucky.
Placing her hand over the wound, she said,
Yeah, I won the frickin' lottery.
With a very serious expression,
You did. You won the best prize you could. Life.
Doc walked out with me. I asked if he wanted a ride, and he said he'd walk.
I told him I wanted to get home and see what was going on, see how the bear was going. We parted ways, and I drove the truck down to the house. When I pulled up, I saw Dalton, Danny, and Thad over at Danny's, and walked over to see what was going on. When I came around the corner of the shop, I saw another man. I was surprised to see they were butchering a hog.
"Why are you guys doing that? We just got that bear," I said.
Dalton looked up.
"Well, we didn't kill it."
Pointing at the strange man, he said, "He did." The young guy looked scared to death.
"What the hell did you do that for?" I asked.
He didn't reply.
"Him and his buddy was trying to poach a pig. I heard the shot and went to see what was going on," Thad said.
I looked around.
"Where's the other one?"
Thad crossed his big arms over his chest. "You remember that boy we found hanging in the tree? The one we buried?" I nodded, and he continued. "Remember the two guys that showed up?" Again, I nodded. "I knew that day they killed that kid. I wanted to kill them then. The day finally came for one of them."
"You sure he did it?" I asked.
Thad pointed at the other man.
"He said they did. And yeah, I'm sure."
Shrugging, I said,
"Sounds like it all worked out. What are we going to do with him?" I asked.
He was working on the pig and glanced up at me, then at the others.
"That's up to you," Dalton said. "You're the sheriff."
"Well, I guess we'll take him to town and put him on the chain gang for a while." I looked at the young man. "There's a price to pay for stealing, and your price is working in the farm on a chain gang." Still working a knife on the hog, the man asked,
"For how long?"
I looked at the pig. "Is that one of the sows that was carrying a litter?"
"She had 10 piglets in her. They're all dead," Thad said.
"So, you killed 11 pigs. You better get friendly with that chain that's going on your ankle. You'll be there for a while."
"What the hell are we going to do with all this meat? We've got the bear, the gator, and now this," Danny said.
"We'll have to pack everything we can into the freezer, I guess," I said.
"There ain't nearly enough room," Danny said.
"Can it?" Dalton said.
"Now there's a good idea. We'll have to talk to Kay and see how many jars she has. That'll be the best way to keep it," Thad said.
"Go check with her. Plus, we'll take a big piece over to Gina, and maybe take some up to the armory in the morning," I said. Thad smiled.
"They'd like that. I'll go see what we've got for jars and lids."
"What do you want to do with this guy when we're done here?" Dalton asked.
"Secure him somewhere, I guess." I took a pair of cuffs from my vest and tossed them to him.
"Will do," Dalton said.
"Hey, Thad, where are the piglets she was carrying?" I asked.
"They're out back where they were butchering her. Why?"
"I want to get them and feed them to the dogs."
Thad nodded.
"That's a good idea. I'll get them. Better than just letting the buzzards eat them."
I left the guys and went home. I wanted to check on Mel and the girls. The dogs were lying in the driveway when I walked up. Little sister got up and came up to me, wagging her tail. I squatted down to rub her head. She curled around as I scratched her head and back. Seeing some attention being doled out, Meathead and Drake came over as well. The three dogs jostled for position in the scratching line. I noticed all of them looked a little thin. They needed more to eat. The piglets certainly wouldn't go to waste. I was happy to find Mel and the girls in the living room. They were piled up on the sofa and love seat, watching a movie on the laptop. Mel looked up as I came in and smiled. Taylor quickly sat up.
"You killed a bear?"
I nodded.
"Yeah, he surprised me, and I shot it. So, we'll have a really good dinner tonight."
"It's a big bear,"
Little Bit shouted, as she bounced on the edge of the sofa.
"Were you scared?"
Laughing, I said, "Yeah, I was. He was in a house and made a noise. I went to see what it was and ran into him."
"Ooh, I would have been so scared."
I walked over and rubbed her head.
"I was too, kiddo."
"You going to sit with us?" Mel asked. I moved over to the sofa and Little Bit wormed out of the way to make room. Sitting down, I asked,
"What are we watching?"
"Willy Wonka," Little Bit shouted.
I leaned back and put my arm around Mel and little bit. Looking at Leanne, I smiled. She was curled up on the end of the love seat, half asleep. Reaching out with my boot, I nudged her knee. She opened her eyes and smiled before quickly drifting off again. Mel patted my shoulder. Go take this stuff off. I looked down at the vest bulging with magazines and other gear. I stood up and took it off, setting it on the floor beside the carbine I'd leaned against the end of the sofa. It was good to take it off. I always felt as if I'd float away, taking all the weight off. Between the carbine, magazines, knife, pistol mags, and pistol, it was heavy. But I'd become so accustomed to wearing it, I never noticed. That is, until I took it off. Then, what really stood out was its absence. Its presence was now normal to me, and that was a sobering thought. But with the hardware now off, I wrapped my arms around Mel and little bit once again and put my feet up on the ottoman. It was time to relax while Willy Wonka, played by Johnny Depp, carried on. As ridiculous as the movie was, it was a very nice distraction. I half dozed and half watched the movie. After a while, little bit said she was hungry. Mel got up and went into the kitchen. I heard her in there puttering around, but had no idea what she was doing. We didn't keep much food at all at the house, as everyone generally ate together. But after a couple of minutes, she returned with a plate. On it were 5 slices of Kay's bread, with a little butter and a lot of honey on them. She set the plate down on the coffee table to cries of delight from the girls. Little Bit and Taylor were instantly on a piece each. It even woke Leanne up, and she quickly grabbed one. Mel handed one to me, and I started trying to fold it in a manner that would keep the honey on the bread. Far easier said than done. And since I'd pretty much given up shaving weeks ago, I had quite the beard going. You just don't realize the amount of food that ends up on your chin until you have a beard. And honey in a beard is a real pain in the ass. Mel was laughing at me as I tried to eat the piece of bread as honey would squirt out from between the folds, despite my best efforts. Licking the sticky substance from my fingers, I said, "You did this on purpose." She laughed as she too tried to find some control on her piece of bread. "Well, I may have put a little extra on yours. But it's only because I love you." I snorted. "It's only because you think it's so funny." Little Bit finished hers in record time and was sitting sideways on the sofa watching me. I looked at her out of the corner of my eye. "What?" Beaming as only a happy child can, she said, "It's so good!" I took another bite of my piece and held the rest out. "You want it?" In a sad attempt at looking bashful, she said, "Yeah." And I handed it to her. Her face lit up. "Thanks, Dad." I spent the afternoon with Mel and the girls. We watched a couple of movies and relaxed. Having something like movies on DVD was a huge bonus. Having something familiar, something that was really frivolous and allowed everyone to escape, was important. We did this sort of thing in the before, but really had taken it for granted. And back then, it had to be in a theater with overpriced sodas and popcorn. Now, we're all sitting here watching the movie on a 17-inch laptop and eating bread with butter and honey, and it costs nothing. Yet, was worth so much more. At dinner time, we shut the computer off and headed for Danny's. Taylor insisted on walking on her own, unassisted. She was beyond us, fretting over her. So we let her go on her own, but stayed close. While slow, she was certainly getting better. It showed in the way she carried herself. She was taking the whole thing well overall. She surprised both Mel and me when she finally got in front of a mirror. She looked at herself and turned her head from side to side, examining the injuries to her face and head. After a moment, a long moment, that Mel and I both held our breath for, she said, "It ain't that bad. My hair will cover most of it, and makeup will cover the rest." She actually turned and smiled at us after saying that. Mel moved in and hugged her. I stayed a little more stoic, however, not wanting her to think I thought it was more than she did. Instead, I just smiled. As we walked up on the porch, the air was full of a mouth-watering aroma. It was a rich and hearty smell, and I couldn't wait to get inside. Opening the door, the odor wrapped around us, and Little Bit shouted,
"Mm-hmm! Something smells good!"
"Yeah, it does," Taylor said. Miss Kay was in the kitchen stirring a large kettle. Seeing us come in, she said, "Come on in and get yourself a bowl of my bear stew." And we did just that. Everyone filed through the kitchen and got their bowl before going out to the porch to sit and eat. Fresh baked bread was sliced and laid out on plates. The butter was there as well, waiting to be spread. We took our seats with Thad and Mary, who were already there. "How is it, Thad?" I asked as I sat down. His head was low over the bowl with the spoon in one hand and a piece of bread in the other. He looked up, shook his head, and said, "You don't want none." I laughed. "That good, huh?" And I slid into my seat. Mary smiled. "It's really good, Morgan." Little Bit was already at work on hers and announced, "Miss Kay, this is super good. Can I have more?" Mike, Ted, and Dalton came through the door. They were carrying on like a bunch of kids getting out of school. Miss Kay shushed them, and after filling their bowls, ran them out to the porch. They were taking their seats as Jess came in. She went to the kitchen and said she wanted dinner for her, Fred, and Jamie to go. They were going to eat with her at home. "What is it?" Jess asked. "It smells wonderful." Dunking a large ladle into the steaming pot, Kay replied, "Just a little stew I threw together." "Don't let her fool you," Bobby said. "She worked hard on it, and it's really good." Kay filled a large plastic bowl with stew and put a lid on it. She then put a half a loaf of bread in a bag with the stew and handed it to Jess. "Here you go, honey. Let me know what the girls think of it," Kay said. Jess smiled. "I know it's good. Thanks, Kay." We sat around and talked a bit. I was happy to see Leanne laughing at Mike and Dalton, who were carrying on. Mary was sitting with Thad, and they were talking quietly. Mel and Bobby were talking with one another, and I was trying to get through my dinner so I could head to the barricade. Tonight, Danny and I were on duty, and I'm sure Sarge would want to be relieved. Danny was sitting with Jace and Edie at the table in the kitchen. Little Bit sat with them as well, and they were all laughing. Danny was feeding Edie like a baby, playing airplane with the spoon. She was giggling loudly, and the other kids were as well. Each time he'd get a spoonful, all three kids would open their mouths like a nest of baby birds. They were having a good time. As soon as I finished my meal, I returned my bowl to the sink and gave Mel a kiss, telling her I'd be back later. Danny told the kids he had to go. They complained, but settled down to their dinner quickly. "You need any help tonight?" Thad asked. "Nah, we got it," I replied. "Just let me know," he said with a smile. After telling the girls goodbye, we left the house. As we walked the short distance to the bunker, we talked about the kids. I'd asked Danny how they were doing. "They're actually doing pretty good. I'm surprised how well they're handling things." "Are they asking about their mom and dad?" Danny shook his head. "No, it's kind of weird. They know they're dead and say they're in heaven. They cry sometimes, but not very often. Bobby and Edie are really close. They spend a lot of time together. And little Jace just wants to follow me around. It's kind of cool." "It's a sad thing, but I'm glad they're dealing with it." Danny smiled. "I think they're going to be fine." Sarge and Eric were sitting on top of the bunker when we got there. In his usual pleasant style, he let us know he was happy to see us. Looking at his wrist, where there was no watch, he shouted, "About damn time!" "Look, old man, I'm right on time," I replied. Sarge snorted. "On time, huh? What the hell would you know about being on time? I bet your ass was late to your own birth." I laughed. "Whenever I show up is exactly when I'm supposed to be there." "Well, I'm glad to see you," Eric said as he hopped off the bunker. "You guys better hurry before Mike and the guys eat all that bear stew Kay made," Danny said. "Those snot-nosed runts better save me some," Sarge shouted. Eric waved at him. "Come on, let's go get us some. I'm starving." Sarge looked over at me. "Tomorrow we're going to town with Mike and Ted to work up the plan to hit the Elks camp.
I nodded. Good. We need to go early so I can drop that pig thief off with Cecil. Sarge shook his head.
Damn shame losing that hog like that. Thad said he shot one of them. Said he'd hung a boy out in the woods somewhere.
Yeah, we found the guy hanging and buried him. It really messed that up, but I guess he finally dealt with that demon. Sarge was nodding his head while he thought.
I'm guessing he's going on the chain gang.
I nodded, and he asked, how long are you going to keep him there? Shrugging, I said, I don't know. He's got to work off 11 hogs.
A damn shame, Sarge said.
They won't go to waste. Thad collected them, and we'll feed them to the dogs, I said.
Them dogs been eating pretty good lately, Sarge said.
If you're going to stay here and bullshit, I'm going to get me some dinner, Eric said. Sarge twisted his face and replied,
Ah, quit your belly aching.
Looking at me, he said, I'll see you in the morning. I took the small radio from its pocket on my vest and pulled the antenna out. Sarge added, You better write down any messages you hear. Taking a pad and pen out, I smiled and said, Way ahead of you. Sarge snorted.
If you was ahead of me, we'd have the last message.
Then he looked at Danny. Will you please keep him in line? Danny shrugged. Many better than me have tried and failed. Sarge laughed as he and Eric headed for the house and a warm bowl of stew. Danny and I settled into the normal routine of preparing for the maddening onslaught of mosquitoes. But this time, I had a secret weapon. Reaching into my shirt pocket, I pulled out a small, wadded mosquito head net. I'd found it in one of the boxes from the shed. It was a cheap piece of fine mesh with elastic around the top and bottom. I pulled it over my boonie hat and pushed it down into my collar.
That's much better, I said, as I rolled down my sleeves and put on a pair of gloves.
Danny looked at me.
You suck.
Smiling, I said, Hey man, don't hate the player. We tried to get comfortable and took turns scanning the country with the NVGs. We talked a little about the kids and the forthcoming confrontation with the DHS. Neither of us was particularly excited about it. It was certain people would die. It was simply too big a group to take on and not expect casualties. What about the girls? Danny asked. You going to let them go?
I don't want to, but I know they won't be left behind either. And as much as I hate to say it, we'll need every trigger puller we can muster.
Danny grunted.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Let's just hope the old man comes up with some sort of amazing plan. You know he doesn't like a fair fight.
The night wore on and clouds moved in, blocking out the stars that filled the sky and unfathomable numbers. When it was time for the radio broadcast, I turned the little radio on. Static poured from the small speaker, and I wondered aloud if there would be a broadcast or not. But just when I felt there wouldn't be, the speaker crackled and the Star Spangled Banner began to play. I set the radio on the bunker and leaned beside it to take in the news.
You're listening to John Jacob Schmidt on the Radio Free Redoubt, broadcasting to all of you in the occupied territory as well as those outside the wire, bringing you the news you need in these uncertain times. We have urgent news for all of you patriots out there tonight. The UN Security Council rejected the resolution to send peacekeepers here. This is good news. The fact the international community joined together to renounce sending armed forces into the U.S. is positive for us. Several nations agreed, instead, to send aid in the form of food, medicine, and clothing. Unfortunately, however, the Russians and Chinese have stated they will act unilaterally and send troops here at the request of the president. The request was made after the president released launch codes to NORAD with instructions to launch against the patriotic forces of our military. Upon receiving the launch codes, NORAD placed themselves under the command of General Buster Peters of the Air Force, who is a steadfast patriot and firmly set against the plans of the Federalists. The voice chuckled.
Oh, to have been a fly in the wall, whatever hole that bastard president of ours is hiding in when he got that message.
Sadly, intense fighting is raging in the ports of Long Beach and several other California ports between the thug Federalists and noble patriot military forces. and what we can only assume is an attempt to prepare a beachhead for the arrival of the invaders. But now that we have control of our nuclear arsenal, those commies will have to think twice about actually trying to land troops. The language being used was striking. While I had only heard a couple of these broadcasts, there was certainly a change in the language being used. We were now the patriotic forces fighting against the Federalist forces. But I guess it had to happen at some time. Eventually, there would be a drawing of sides, and the propaganda machine was now beginning to move. And while I firmly agreed with the portrayal of the Federalists as thugs, I had to keep in mind that it was still propaganda and must be digested as such. On the home front, great strides have been made against the federal forces. With the liberation of Denver, the western states, with a few exceptions, are now all firmly under the control of the Patriot military. Of course, California is still heavily contested. And with the news from China and Russia, we can only expect things to get worse there before they get better. Guerrilla fighters in the Carolinas and Tennessee have pushed the Federalists out of those states entirely, with staggering losses of federal troops. One report we received said you could walk for a mile on the dead and never touch the ground. Patriot losses were high as well, with over 100 men and women giving their lives for their neighbors. Thankfully, their lives were not lost in vain, as the states are now free of oppression. Relief supplies are beginning to land in the southern and eastern ports. Yesterday, a 14-ship convoy from England docked at the port of Tampa, carrying relief supplies as well as unspecified military aid. Danny looked at me. Tampa? Maybe some help is finally coming. The report continued. Tampa was chosen because of its proximity to Patrick Air Force Base, still the home of SOCOM, or Southern Command, because of their ability to provide security. SOCOM claims to have nearly eliminated all federal forces in the state. That's bullshit, I shouted. There's still plenty of them around here. But I was not looking at the big picture. 100 or so federal thugs in my neck of the woods wasn't a problem for SOCOM, but it damn sure was for us. Mayport in Jacksonville, and home of the 4th Fleet, is also receiving supplies. Naval Air Station Jax is ferrying those supplies to their final destinations. A huge amount of equipment is said to be on its way to the port after being reclaimed from bases around the globe. The Navy claims it's been a Herculean effort to get the equipment loaded. But they met the challenge, and hundreds of armored vehicles and tanks are on their way. Naval and Marine personnel are working feverishly to ensure that all the equipment is ready to roll as soon as they are unloaded. In other news, a sabotage attack at the Lake City Arsenal caused minor damage and one fatality. The perpetrator was caught in the act of trying to set an explosive device. He was forced to detonate it prematurely, which resulted in only minor damage to the ammunition manufacturing plant. The terrorist was taken prisoner, and I'm sure will be questioned extensively. John laughed again. What do you want to bet in some dark hole somewhere that bastard's being waterboarded as I speak? Well, that's it for tonight's update. Tune in tomorrow for the news you need in these uncertain times. Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA began to play. I really liked the song. I turned the volume down a little as I looked at Danny. If those Russians and Chinese get here, it's going to get really, really ugly, I said. Yeah, but he said they were fighting in California, not here. You really think they won't try and eliminate Mayport, NASJAC, SOCOM, not to mention Camp Riley? They'll have to. This place will be a damn battleground. Danny nodded. Plus, there's Homestead. Exactly. All of that would have to be hit before they could even dream of landing troops. Danny was staring out into the darkness. You thinking nukes? I shrugged. I sure as hell hope not. The only thing we can really hope for is that they have other motives, which we know they do, for sending troops in, and that they wouldn't nuke us. It would make it harder for them as well. Kind of screwed up, hoping they're coming here to try to take the country, an actual invasion. Rubbing my face, I said, better than being nuked. When the song finished, I turned the radio off and stuck it back in its pocket. It's kind of amazing. Something as small as this little radio opening up the world to us as it was. information and communication are so important. If it weren't for this radio, we'd be completely in the dark, going from a world of near-instant communication with anyone, anywhere on the planet, to a total vacuum. It was hard to adjust to at first. Now I was on the other end of that spectrum, where it seemed odd to me to hear what was happening in other places, and made me think, that doesn't affect me. But that certainly wasn't the case. These things would undoubtedly affect us. The DHS was bad enough, but at least they were our countrymen. I can't imagine what Chinese and Russian troops would do. We humiliated the Russians in the 80s and ruined their economy in the 90s. Surely they would take their revenge. This thought sent a shudder down my spine as I remembered the atrocities Russian troops committed against German civilians, especially women of all ages, in a fit of retribution. Then there's the Chinese. We've been in an economic war with the Chinese for decades. They too are capable of horrific acts. There was a lot of talk in the before about the Chinese trying to buy up our country. It was said they needed the resources, like coal. Maybe they would make a play to try and just take it and save themselves the money. One thing was certain, though. Neither of these nations had our interests in mind. Danny and I talked of these things into the night until Perez and Ian showed up to relieve us. Perez was in his usual state, and I heard him coming before I saw him. The glow from the cherry of his cigarette showed where he was, and the hacking cough gave away his approach before we even saw it. "You sound like shit," I said as he walked up. As he walked past me into the bunker, he said, "Maybe, but I can get better, and you still look like shit." I laughed. "Touchy much?" "Ignore him," Ian said. "He's just pissed he had to get out of bed." Leaning over, he shouted into the bunker, "He's the biggest damn baby I've ever seen." Perez replied by flipping his cigarette out, its red tip cartwheeling through the air before bouncing off Ian's chest. Ian brushed the ashes off and replied, "Damn baby." "How's Jamie?" Danny asked. Ian leaned his weapon against the side of the bunker. "She's doing all right. Ornery as hell. She wants to get up and do something, but Doc is keeping her in bed." "At least she's all right. Hopefully she gets better quick," I said. "Yeah, I think she'll be all right," Ian said. "All right, I'm out." Ian waved. "Get some sleep, guys." Danny and I walked home together. It was a quiet night, and my gear was making noise. To me, it seemed like a lot of noise. From my boots crunching on the ground to the nylon vest creaking and squeaking, I felt like I was dragging a bunch of cans behind me. I waved goodbye at my gate and peeled off to the house. As I walked up on the porch, the dogs didn't move. I shined my light on them and had to smile. Their bellies, all three of them, were still swollen from the huge meal Thad fed them earlier in the day. Thad laughed when he told me about it, each of the dogs eating a couple of piglets and taking yet another with them when they finally wandered off. They were so full but couldn't resist a doggy bag, pun intended. Now they were all laid out on the deck and couldn't even wag their tails. It may sound kind of odd to be feeding piglets to the dogs. I'm sure back in the before, some PETA bleeding heart would call the police and there would be a damn good chance you can go to jail for such a thing. But if you think about it, what better use for them? Today, we don't have the luxury of going to the store and buying a sack of processed cornmeal to feed them. And I'm not going to let them go hungry, so they have to be fed. Meat is a precious resource and one not to be squandered. But I don't think I'll tell Mel and the girls about it. No doubt they wouldn't approve. I didn't sleep well. Every time I would drift off, I would have dreams. Images of Russian or Chinese troops parading through Umatilla. It was striking to me that the images were always like the ones from propaganda videos and posters of my youth. The soldiers were always portrayed as ruthless brutes. These were the images that ran through my mind. Finally, around 5 a.m, I got up. I just couldn't lie there anymore. I was going to have to get this sleep thing under control. Getting dressed, I wandered out to the kitchen. Lighting the kerosene stove, I set a pot of water on to boil. There was a dish sitting on the counter covered with a cloth.
Taking a look, I was surprised to see several large pieces of cooked meat on it.
Well, this is a nice surprise, I thought.
Taking out the half loaf of bread, I sliced off a thick piece and laid a piece of meat on it. Folding it like a taco, I ate it while I waited for the water to boil. I guessed it was bear meat, and it was wonderful. It was like eating a sandwich, something I hadn't had in a long, long time. I hadn't thought about a sandwich in some time, but now that I was eating something close to one, the memory of a good Dagwood-style sandwich returned to me. But at the moment, this was just as good. Before the kettle whistled, I took it off the heat and poured a cup full. Taking a tea ball out, I filled it with the loose tea and dropped it into the cup. While the tea steeped, I got out some sugar and thought about how good it would be with some milk. Then I remembered the market visit where the old man said he'd have milk. I'd stop on the way to town and grab some, which meant I needed something to trade for it. But that wouldn't be an issue right now. We had gator meat, pork, and bear. I think the old guy would probably like some more meat. With tea in hand, I went out on the porch and sat down on the bench. The dogs were apparently feeling better now and sat up when I came out. They crowded around, all wanting some head-scratching, which I gladly provided. Drake laid his head in my lap, and I rubbed his ears. He rolled his head into my hand as I scratched and rubbed. Meathead was a little more direct in his approach. He jammed his massive head into my cup, sloshing hot tea into my lap. "Shit!" I shouted, as I brushed it off my pants. He smelled it and started to lick at the wet spot. I pushed his head away, saying, "Little too gay there, dude." But it was nice to sit with them. Off in the direction of Sarge's house, I heard a diesel engine rumble to life. That meant it was time to get my stuff together for the ride to town. I went inside and grabbed my gear and hung the bulk on my body. I stepped into the bedroom where Mel was asleep, and I leaned over and kissed her. Rolling over, she asked, "Where are you going?" "Into town. We have to meet with Sheffield." Half asleep, she said, "Okay, be careful. Love you." I patted her ass. "I will. Always am. Love you too." But she was already back to sleep. I envied her. Mel could lie down and be asleep before her head was on the pillow. I used to tease her, saying she had a mercury switch in her head. All she had to do was get horizontal, and she was out. Must be nice. I walked over to Danny's and found him sitting on the porch. "You're up early," I said. He rocked in his chair. "Couldn't really sleep." Walking up on the porch, I said, "Me neither." "You guys headed to town?" Sitting down in another rocker, I said, "Yeah, we have to meet with the captain and see what we can do about those feds out at the Elks camp. I'll be interested to see what they come up with. I'm not looking forward to it, though." Rocking my chair, I replied, "Me neither, buddy. It scares the shit out of me, actually." Sarge's Hummer pulled through the gate and stopped in front of the house. Sarge got out with Miss Kay. Then Mike, Ted, and Dalton piled out as well. Kay stopped at the door on her way into the house. "You boys are up early." I smiled. "Waiting on breakfast," she smiled. "It'll be ready shortly." Sarge came up on the porch, coffee cup in one hand and a thermos in the other. He took the last available chair. Mike looked around and said, "Where the hell am I supposed to sit?" Sarge reached out with his foot and pushed his ass. "Kids play in the yard, not on the porch." Mike grabbed his crotch. "I got your kids right here." Sarge made a wild kick at his hand that Mike easily avoided. Mike stepped back laughing and gave the old man the finger. Sarge chuckled and said, "You're lucky I ain't had my coffee yet." "Whatever, Grandpa," Mike replied. Sarge leaned forward in a motion like he was going to throw the hot coffee on Mike. Mike jumped and ran for the door and into the house. Sarge sat back laughing. "Like I'd waste good coffee on his miserable ass." Ted was shaking his head and sat down on the edge of the porch. I looked the two of them over. "You guys are off to an early start." Sarge cocked his head to the side. "Shit. What the hell are you doing up before the damn sun?" "Couldn't sleep." Sarge snorted. "Who are you kidding? You wet the bed, didn't you?" Ted's head rocked back in laughter. With a laugh, I said, "No,
I got up in the middle of the night and pissed in your coffee cup.
Sarge took a big gulp of coffee and swished it around in his mouth, swallowing it. He asked,
Damn, you eat asparagus yesterday?
I couldn't help but laugh, as did Ted, Dalton, and Danny.
That's messed up, Danny said.
We hung out on the porch for a little while, talking about the news I'd heard the night before. Sarge had some choice words about Russian and Chinese troops.
I've always wanted to kill me a commie. I grew up with the duck and cover crap. We were told every day the Russians wanted to nuke the shit out of us. That's why I went into the army. But all I ever killed were ragheads and man dresses.
Looks like you might get your chance now. Two flavors, borscht and chow mein.
It's them rice eaters I'd like a shot at, Ted said.
I'd rather not tangle with either one of them, I said.
Honestly, I don't want to either, Morgan, Sarge said.
Waving his arm out at the scene in front of us, he added, What we've been up against here will be child's play compared to fighting either one of them. They'll bring all their party favors, and it'll be ugly.
We continued to talk as the sun rose and the world began to wake up. The birds began to announce to all they were awake. A flight of sandhill cranes passed over the house, making their raucous call. Large birds, they looked so elegant when on the wing. And the red crest on their heads made them really stand out. Thad, Jess, and Doc showed up and took up spots on the porch. I asked Doc how Jamie was doing. He leaned back against a post and said,
She's doing pretty good. I think she'll be fine.
Kay came out onto the porch with a large platter. On it were large biscuits with meat sandwiched in them. Mike came out behind her. With a mouthful of biscuit, he pointed at the one in his hand and said,
This shit is good.
He caught himself and looked at Kay.
Oops, sorry. This is a good biscuit.
Kay smiled at him. That's all right, Mike. She handed me a biscuit, and I looked at it.
What's in it?
Kay straightened.
It's sausage, silly.
I exclaimed.
Sausage? How'd we get sausage?
How do you think, Dunderhead? We butchered a hog yesterday. Sarge barked.
I know, but I didn't know we had sausage-making stuff, I replied.
Taking a bite, I closed my eyes.
Oh, that is good.
Mike was bouncing up and down, nodding his head vigorously.
Told you, told you.
Mary and I used Danny's grinder and some spices Bobby had, and I got some more from Mel, Kay said. Touching a finger to the side of her face, she added,
That reminds me. I need to check the rest of the houses for more spices.
I'll do it, Kay. We'll handle that for you today, Jess said.
Oh, you're a dear.
I will, too, if it means more of this sausage, Sarge barked. Miss Kay, this is amazingly good.
She smiled.
Thank you, Linus.
Everyone agreed the sausage was wonderful. It was a really nice change. We take for granted what seasoned food tastes like. Spices and herbs from around the world were at our fingertips on the grocery store shelves. We never gave a second thought to what it took to get all those wonderful seasonings into our food. But let me tell you, after several months of very little spice used in our cooking, this sausage was a taste explosion.
Thad looked at the last bite of his biscuit.
I'm sure gonna miss your cooking, Miss Kay.
What do you mean you're gonna miss my cooking? Where are you going, Thad?
Thad pointed at me.
Old Sheriff Morgan here got me shanghaied into working on the farm for a couple of days.
Kay spun around to face me, with her hands firmly planted on her hips, as she tore into me.
What do you mean you got him working on the farm?
Thad laughed.
It ain't like that, Miss Kay.
Then the realization came over her.
Wait, we have a farm?
Indeed we do. We've got over 50 acres plowed and ready to plant, I said.
Thad laughed.
Yeah, we got 50 acres ready to plant.
Holding up my hands, I said,
Okay, okay, you and Cecil have it ready to plant.
What are you planting? Kay asked. Thad rubbed his hands on his legs.
Oh, Cecil has all kinds of seeds piled up. I don't know it all, but there's going to be a lot of it if we can get people to work down there.
Enough of this, John. Time to get this goat rope on the road, Sarge said.
I want to stop at the market in Altoona and see if they have any milk, I said.
Milk?
Kay asked. Nodding, I said, "The old guy we got the butter from should have some milk this morning." Clasping her hands in front of her face, she said, "That would be wonderful. It would make these biscuits better. I could make buttermilk." "How do you make buttermilk?" Danny asked. With a dismissive wave, she said, "Oh, that's easy. Just a little vinegar or even lemon juice added in will make buttermilk." She winked. "And we have vinegar." "A cold glass of clabber would be good," Sarge said. Standing up, he added, "Wish we had some cornbread to put in it." With a very distasteful look, Mike asked, "Clabber? What the hell?" Kay smiled at Mike and patted him on the shoulder. "It's just another name for buttermilk." "Kay, I need some meat to trade for the milk," I said. She went in the house and returned shortly with a plastic bag and handed it to me. I looked in it and saw several other bags inside containing various cuts of meat. Kay pointed at the bag and said, "There is some sausage in there, too." Looking back into the bag, I asked, "You sure you want to trade that?" She smiled. "We've got plenty, and I can make more. We're going to be busy today canning as much of the meat as we can, but I'll make another batch of sausage today if you guys want it." There was unanimous approval of the suggestion. Kay smiled and said she'd have it ready later today. We said our goodbyes and headed out. Thad was going to ride with me and Sarge, and the guys had to pick up the prisoner. We drove up to the end of the road to wait for Sarge and talked about the farm while we waited. Then, a sudden thump on the back of the truck scared the crap out of us. We both jumped, and I looked in the rearview mirror to see Dalton's face pressed against the glass with a clownish grin. "What the hell's wrong with you? That's a good way to get lead poisoning," I shouted. Dalton walked around to my door and leaned on the side of the truck. Looking in, he said, "Then bring that rifle up. Go ahead. Let me see." I grabbed the rifle and went to swing it out the window. The barrel banged into the steering wheel. Thad was ducking for cover, though in my defense, the muzzle was never pointed at him. Dalton laughed at me. "That's the problem with full-size carbine in the truck. Just use your pistol." Yeah, I know. You need to hop in. We're headed to town to meet with the guard. This about the Elks camp?" I nodded, and he quickly climbed in. Leaning over the back of my seat and using a thick hillbilly drawl, he said, "We going to town, Pa?" When I saw Sarge's Hummer coming up behind me, I pulled out. He followed me up to the Kangaroo in Altoona. I pulled up in front of the dairyman's stand and hopped out. He was setting large jars of milk and butter out on the table. The milk was in large half-gallon jars. There were also quart and pint jars of butter and cream. He greeted me as I got out.
"Morning. That gator meat sure was good."
"Well, I wanted to get some milk this morning." Dropping the bag on the table, I opened it and said, "I brought some more meat. This time, it's bear, pork, and sausage." He reached out and picked up the bag.
"Bear meat, you say?"
Looking at me, he added, "And sausage?"
"Yeah, and that sausage is good, too. Had some for breakfast."
The old man took the meat out and inspected the packages.
"How much milk you want?"
Looking at the jars sitting on the table, I said,
"How about 4 of them?"
The old man rubbed his chin.
"I don't know."
I picked up the sausage. "This here is worth 1 jar by itself. I know you have to tend to those cows and milk them. I know there's work in it, but there's work in this as well." Picking up the big bag of bear meat, I said, "And this is bear. It's good meat. Not to mention, there's a whole pork roast in here."
"How about 3 jars of milk?"
I picked up a pint of butter. 3 and this." He nodded.
"Deal."
I shook his hand and picked up my jars.
"You keep bringing meat, and I'll keep you in milk."
"I'll try. I have another deal I'd like to talk to you about later, but I'll have to come back for that."
"Anytime. I'm here every day."
Chapter 8. Pulling up to the armory, I was surprised to see a rather large crowd gathered in the parking lot. What was even better was the fact that many of them were clutching shovels, hoes, and rakes. They'd brought their own implements with them. Parking the truck, we got out and found Cecil. He was standing with a sergeant, who was organizing the crowd into groups for transport. "Morning, Cecil," I said. He stuck out his hand. "Morning, fellas." Sweeping his arm over the crowd, he said, "Look at all of them. I can't believe so many people turned out. It's surprising, but it's the first day. Let's see how many turn out tomorrow." "However long they work is good. We need all the bodies we can get out there," Thad said. Sarge walked up with our prisoner. "Here's another one for the chain gang." Cecil looked at the man. "What'd he do?" "Killed one of our hogs. She was about ready to drop a litter of piglets," Thad said. Cecil snorted and looked directly at the kid. "I'd have shot his ass." Robert looked at the ground and said nothing. Thad looked at him and replied, "He's the lucky one." Cecil's eyebrows went up. "There were more?" "There was one more," Thad said. Cecil looked at Robert. "I guess it's your lucky day, then." He pointed to where the other men sentenced to labor were standing with Shane. They were each holding a handful of chain that went down to their foot, where it was wrapped around it and secured with a padlock. Sarge looked at Mike. "Take this turd over there and have Shane get him hooked up to the shitbird parade." Mike pushed Robert. "Let's go. Time for you to join a gang." As Mike followed him, he started to sing. "Don't you know that's the sound of the men working on the chain gang? Working on the chain gang?" I laughed at him. "That dude just ain't right." Robert kept his head down as he was guided through the crowd by Mike. He was ashamed. He was handcuffed and about to be chained to other men, right in front of the entire town. People parted as he walked past. Some of the women in the group gave him dirty looks, and more than one person asked, "What'd he do?" Mike, being Mike, began to call out, "Coming through! Make a hole! Pig thief coming through!" Hearing what he'd done, people looked at Robert with disgust and some with possible envy. The latter was reinforced with a comment of, "Who the hell has a hog nowadays?" Mike found Shane and grabbed the back of Robert's pants. "Got another volunteer for you, Shane." Shane looked at him. "This is your pig thief." Mike snickered. "The only one left alive." Shane looked at Robert and asked, "What's your name?" "Robert." "Well, Robert, you'll get to know these guys real good over the next few days. Move over there in the end." He pointed where he wanted him to stand, and Sean secured him to the chain with the others. "Now that everyone's here, I'll introduce you to the guards." Shane pointed to two guardsmen. "I would like you to meet Officer and Officer. You can also refer to them as Boss, Hoss, or Jefe, but you will always speak to them with respect. Understand that if you dimwits get the idea to try and run off together, you will be shot. There will be no warning shots. There will be no shouted warnings. These men will lay out the boundaries you are to remain in, and if you venture even one foot over that line, you'll be shot. Am I clear on this?" The men nodded. Robert looked around. "What about food? Are you going to feed us?" "You'll get one meal at midday." Dave leaned against the truck they were standing beside. "What if we have to take a shit?" "You'll have to work that out between yourselves, but you never come off the chain. One of you gets sick or hurt, you carry him. You gotta take a piss, you do it on the chain. Hell, if you want to have a circle jerk, you do it on the chain." One of the guardsmen interrupted him. "A circle jerk will get you shot as well." Mike laughed. "Hell yeah, it will. You guys seem to have this under control. I gotta run." Looking at the men in the chain, he wagged a finger at them. "You boys behave now." Shane waved. "See you later." Sheffield leaned back in his chair. "I don't like it." Sarge shook his head. He'd expected this. "What don't you like about it?" Sheffield patted the table. "We're going to lose people. There'll be casualties." "Probably a lot of them," Livingston added. Sarge nodded. "There will be casualties, no doubt. But that's the nature of the business. But with what we have, this is the best we can do." "There's got to be another way," Sheffield said. "Look, Captain, I know you don't want to lose any people, but that's the business we're in, combat. We kill people. That's our job. It comes with certain occupational hazards." "Like death,"
Livingston said. I know you're all gung-ho and have no issues sending men in to die, but I'd like to avoid it, if at all possible, Sheffield said. Sarge leaned forward. You think I'm cavalier? You think I don't know the cost of this? He jumped to his feet and pointed an accusatory finger at Sheffield. How many fucking graves have you dug? In recent days, we've buried some of ours. How many of your people have died here? Sheffield held his hands up. Look, Top, I'm not saying you don't care. I'm sorry. I know you guys have carried the brunt of the loss here. The only deaths we've had were from illness. But this is going to be a terrible deal. People are going to die. I just want to make sure we do all we can to limit it. Maybe we should wait a while. Sarge asked. Have you been listening to the radio? Sheffield looked at Livingston, who shrugged. Looking back at Sarge, he said, What radio? Pointing at